Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, everyone. Wow, what a roller coaster. We're here during the end of Level Game Week 34, which has been without that one of the most swingy weeks we've seen for a while. Various permutations in terms of free hit choice and 1 week punts from those now on wild cards, all of which led to some really diverging outcomes here and there. Sam's back after watching Palace dismantle West Ham last Sunday during the 300th pod. But obviously, if you heard that, you have a lovely voice note he sent in. I'm bitten, I'm afraid. So the will be some strategic muting. So if it goes quiet for a second, it's just me having a coughing fit. And apologies for any coughing that does make it into the audio, any snottiness in general. How are you doing, Sam? You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I had a good time. Well, although I'm sorry to miss the 300th pod, of course, but I think as far as games go, that I could have missed it for, it was a pretty good excuse. 5-2 and two of our players hauling in that game as well. I was kind of beside myself when the Eze goal went in. The overhead kick, if you remember it, was absolutely incredible to watch live. Only matched, I think, by Graziano Pella a few years back when he took it on the turn, basically kicked it up from a nothing start and overhead kicked it, bicycle kicked it against Queen's Park Rangers even, which was very, very fun as a Saints fan. Little less fun this weekend, though, as a Saints
fan.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Or midweek even. So we'll speed through that for now.
Yeah, gloss over.
Yeah, why not? Other than that, all good. Thank you very much. We are Who Got the Assist. On today's pod, it's a short look at free hit outcomes this week. Obviously, it's scores on the doors. We're not really locked in on points just yet. Half-time in a lot of the matches on Wednesday. Some high variance swings, though, and also a discussion perhaps on dealing with those outcomes and what it means going forward for us both and for you out there as well, including coverage of the different strategies out there to come for the rest of the season. And then, obviously, a look at moves and the wildcard inclusions for game week 35 onwards. Neither of us are on wildcard 35 strategy, but I think there's going to be a good debate around the best picks, around how far we all go in terms of risk between now and the end of the season. Whether or not you're on a wildcard, I think that will be relevant to you and certainly will be to both of us. And plus, of course, we'll have our Game Week 35 preview with bold claims, best captain and best transfers in, some of which will be covered in the prior discussion. But we just want to make sure we cover it all before wrapping up the pod. It is the 24th of April. It's a Wednesday, obviously, rather than the Thursday. We were originally going to go for the Thursday, but we've got some work commitments that meant that we pushed it a day earlier. So Man City and Brighton still to play tomorrow. It looks like no Haaland. I think there might be an appearance for Foden, so we'll have to wait and see on that. But a lot of free hit ranks will largely be defined based on the action that goes on in the background of this podcast tonight. So for clarity, I think I've got 8 and you've got 7 players, or one way or the other. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you've got, because of Jota being injured.
Yeah, of course. So, 7 and 8 respectively, involved right now as we're recording. So there will be a bit of in-game reacting, but obviously we'll keep you abreast of how it's all going during the live recording. In the meantime, though, shall we have a look at scores on the doors, Tom?
Yeah, go on then. Let's get to it. Who is up first? I think
you can go first.
Looks like me, doesn't it? So in the end, a couple of kind of switcheroos from the team that I did present last week, which is obviously always going to happen. End up going Henderson in the end. I was between him or Neto. Neto hasn't played tonight. Travers has traversed his way in. That was awful. I'm really sorry. I'm ill.
No, that was actually one of your better ones.
Oh, okay. I'll tell that. So Henderson scored the own goal, obviously, a very, very comical own goal.
Scored that live as well.
yeah, in the Palace game. So he's now back on 0, thankfully, but it won't be for long after Newcastle score a couple and diminish the green arrow a bit further. At the back, I did have Ben White up until the very last minute when I swapped him out for Saliba. There were some worries about him being rotated, which I obviously wish I didn't think about too much now. Virgil just got yellow card, doesn't he? So yeah, that's great. Brereton Diaz, I mean, let's just hope we get something up him in the second half, because I think that'd be quite big. Ezzy, as you mentioned, with a big 12 pointer thus far. Saka, who was just over the 100% mark with just the assists, so didn't have the ideal Arsenal triple up by any means, which definitely hurt the green arrow. Salah captain, I mean, he doesn't look at the races. Hopefully he can still pull one out in the second half, but we shall see. Mateta up front, and obviously Solanke as well. Went for Jota in the end, as kind of a why not. First kind of game was obviously great, but then him being injured, it kind of feels like that's kind of the whole thing, really. The first half of the game week was just really good, and the second half, with the second kind of iteration of these 11 players playing, hasn't been anywhere near as good. So I think I was up to kind of 70k at one point, now back down to kind of 94k just about. But still, I mean, it is mission accomplished for the week, I suppose, because all I wanted to do was obviously beat out my team from last week, which obviously I did, and beat out the average, which I did as well. I think I'm on the green arrow by kind of 14 points or so. Stuff like Garnacho getting an assist is a bit annoying, and if Newcastle attackers get returns, and again, that's a bit annoying. But yeah, gain rank of about kind of 40k, just inside the top 100k at the moment, hoping to cling on and hopefully trying to build from there towards the end of the season. And yeah, we'll discuss this in a little bit in terms of, you know, how far we're going to risk things. But yeah, I don't know. It kind of feels like it's fair to middling after starting really well. Like, we were both very excited, weren't we, on the weekend? But it does feel like it's come back down to earth a little bit, which I know sounds a bit churlish. Like, if you're having a really bad week, obviously I feel for you. But you know, it was a big chance for significant rank gains, which were slightly diluted by certainly not having the likes of White and Odegaard last night. And we may well see that kind of happen further today, but we shall see. What about you, Sam?
I'm not in as good a mood as you. I'm a little bit frustrated with how the free hit's gone, to be honest. We've only got one difference in our teams, but that difference is Diaz versus Jota. Diaz is doing absolutely nothing at the moment. And to be honest, yeah, I'm pretty frustrated. I completely understand if most people are like, cry me a river, because it is a green arrow at this point. It's not a terrible week by any means, but this was the week I was building up to for a long time. And I feel like I've kind of wasted the big upside for all of the sacrifice I was taking earlier on. I've ended up on the wrong Arsenal triple up, much like you, it feels like, and the wrong Liverpool triple up as well. Although that being said, there's not been that many Liverpool assets that have done well so far. Hopefully second half will prove slightly different. Henderson in goal instead of Pickford hasn't gone particularly well so far either. And yeah, whilst it is a green arrow, it's a fairly small green arrow, and on a free hit, I really wanted or needed more. And with the green arrow kind of evaporating away minute by minute, both last night and tonight, it's just ended up being quite frustrating. All the while, and I think what's compounded that frustration is, whilst the free hit has been occurring, a load of my players that I will be bringing back outside of my free hit for next week are now flagged, which makes everything just that little bit less pleasant whilst on the free hit, knowing that any minute now I need to go and look at my actual team for game week 35, knowing that I've got a lot of problems to sort. So look, I completely get it. It's not the worst situation in the world. I'm just outside the top 100K. I was really, really hoping for a big week, and it's not looking like that at the moment. And that's what's frustrating me the most. But a green arrow nevertheless. And yeah, I shouldn't be moaning too much, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a green's a green, right? But yeah, you're right. It's just what could have been, and all those permutations, which, they do haunt you, don't they? So I think there's a couple of kind of points of order here. The first one being that there's obviously a bit of sadness given the FA Cup news. Well, I don't think we've covered this because we've been off air and obviously did the 300 pod on the weekend rather than talking about topical issues. But I mean, this could be the last season we have these kinds of strategies. The FA Cup news means it's all going to change. Like, most doubles are going to evaporate, as far as I understand, Sam. I think that the likes of James and Ben Credin were saying there's only going to be kind of like maybe kind of, I think it's like a maximum of kind of six fixtures displaced or something like that. So yeah, it's not the best. That's a Wolves goal.
Yeah, and the Sheffield United goal, by the way. I'll keep an eye on it whilst you carry on.
So I think the key impacts really are threefold, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it. First is that the start's going to be really important, like much more important. We all say the start's obviously really important, but what is really huge about it is that there's less ways now to redeem yourself without the doubles, the claw back kind of a poor start. Like, it's really important.
Whereas the Diaz.
Sorry, everybody. we both really needed that. Sorry, the whole, let's redo the start. Back to the matter at hand. So there's less ways to redeem yourself without the doubles to call you back. And like, for example, we had kind of indifferent starts to the season. And without kind of having that strategic kind of maneuvering around the doubles, which some I understand completely dislike, whatever, for us, it was like a really key way for us to be able to claw our way back and get ourselves back to a decent rank. So without the doubles being there to the same extent they are now, without that kind of added layer of complexity, basically it feels like you may well be locked in by game week 10. That may be the case. I'm not saying that that's obviously pretty extreme to say, but it could be true. Like, it could be that if you've had a crap start, it may be that you kind of think, well, you know, screw it, the season may well be done already. Like, I think everyone's kind of either had or seen examples of somebody who tends to be a good manager, the first couple of weeks just get it wrong, and then before you know it, you're kind of 2 million, and it might be quite a lot. It might be a long way back, especially without those doubles later on to hang your hat on. At least the doubles, to the extent we have them now, that will mean a couple of things. One is that we have to be kind of braver with and hope to get lucky with both rogue differentials and captain picks. And to be honest, rogue captain picks early on are going to be key to marking yourself out and getting a good start, like ignoring the template, which is going to be harder and harder given the proliferation of information. And chips, like, I don't know what happens now. Does bench boost game week one become pretty popular? City are in the World Club Cup and there's a postponement. I guess a mini double game week would mean we all spaff that chip early. Does the free hit just get used when your team is decimated? And do you just triple captain like a Haaland or something versus a newly promoted club this time? Like, I think they really need an overhaul, but I've got no trust they're ever going to be overhauled. So yeah, that's kind of the way I look at it at the moment. I'm a little bit kind of, I feel like it's going to change the nature of FPL as we know it, and it might be a bit, I don't know, I think it might lose a bit of luster somehow. With all of this, I was a little bit disappointed. I'm just hoping that FPL do innovate, but my hope in FPL innovating is obviously quite low.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I'm going to try and counteract that side of the argument. That's not to say I don't agree with everything you've said there, but I'm trying to look on the positive side of life with this announcement as well, for balance. And I think there is elements of, okay, it all kind of puts us down a very set path. It's going to be harder to find ways of regaining mass ground in the second half of the season. But I also think it means that there's now more flexibility with strategy, because at the moment, now is a really good point in case where, okay, we've got a load of double game weeks. We're all ending up on very, very similar teams or on one of two or three major strategies. It has kind of divided the community a bit this year, But generally speaking, most people are on one of two main strategies, especially by this point. Whereas in the future, if there's only a handful of smaller double game weeks, I think there is an argument to say that, okay, maybe you can have a bit more fun with it. You can interpret it in your own way. Maybe you don't rate one of the teams that happens to have a double, and therefore you think, okay, I'm not going to use my bench boost during that double game week. I just don't fancy it. It doesn't suit my team. I'm going to go with, let's say, just as an example, your Arsenals, your Liverpools, who don't have a double in game week 35, 36, 37, but they are still good teams. And maybe you want to fight against the smaller doubles with good teams, good fixtures, but in single game weeks. And also with differential captaincy as well. If there's less double game weeks, there'll be less game weeks that you're kind of locked into one or two very obvious picks. So obviously, every year there's a double game week for Man City or a Liverpool. And you're like, well, obviously, like this week, for instance, it's got to be a Salah captain or a Saka captain against for Arsenal, or a Haaland captain for Man City when they've got, oh, Mateta goal, very nice, when they've got a double game week. Can you notice I'm getting happier? That's weird. How's that happened? Anyway, all of these things come together and combine. And I think it does mean that whilst, yes, it's going to be harder to regain mass ground if you follow a template, I think there's now less reason to follow that template. And I think you can be different. Maybe it's not, in inverted commas, optimal to be different, but I think there's more gains to be made by doing so and thinking a little bit outside the box, using your eyes a little bit more and seeing what's happening on the pitch and following form, following what you're seeing with your own eyes on the grass, and therefore kind of bringing the decision making back into our own control. Whereas in right now, I feel like the back end of the season, probably since game week 19, 20, when double game weeks start popping up on the horizon, I feel like yourself into a strategy pretty early, and
you do.
That's kind of it. Obviously, it's one of two strategies, and there's a really nice moment where you get to really think it out and like, which strategy's for me? How does that affect me moving forwards? But I think it's a new adventure now where potentially we've got less of that planning to do, but actually it's thinking about, okay, what's the good fixture runs? Which players are coming into form? Where can I be different? Where can I regain those margins? And maybe you back against a Haaland because he doesn't have a double game week. And that's where the fun can come back in. And yeah, I can see it in your way as well, definitely. But I think it definitely goes both ways.
I think so. I think it really kind of, as you say, it's new adventure. It's potentially some status quo bias from my perspective, where I can only see what we're losing. But you're right, there may be a whole new sort of way of playing, which could be a gain. I mean, there are definitely a lot of people who this week are licking their wounds and kind of bemoaning outcomes. And it was certainly, we were in that camp as well last night. So, I mean, it sounds a bit rich to say, but that is the truth. So I think, we need to see what happens. We both can keep playing, obviously. That's not going to be, a problem. But I think, it'll certainly be interesting to understand where those edges now lie, as you're kind of hinting at, Sam. And that, for me, I think, with losing the double game weeks, which was and always has been a very large edge over casuals or less engaged managers, whatever you want to call them, losing that is probably kind of one of the big sort of downsides for me from this news. I mean, there will still be doubles, but they just won't be anywhere near. But they may. I think that James said that there's midweeks which are left free actually after the FA Cup quarters or semis,
right?
So maybe we won't get many at all. But hey, we'll need to see. Maybe in some ways it will make us sort of properly cherish them again. I feel like, last few years we've definitely been a bit
kind of death by chocolate a little bit. All a little bit moorish, and then it just gets a bit sickly by the end of the season. I'm kind of bored of them now at this point. Like, I can't be bothered to buy Spurs assets this week because just why bother? I get what you mean.
And in terms of what you said as well about, everything kind of being quite regimented and quite preordained from a certain point in the week, that as well probably has, there's probably something to say about that too. As you said, by game, by a certain game week, you're pretty much locked on your strategy, and that kind of precludes you in most cases from buying in certain players left, right, and center. And doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. So, for example, you know, I was thinking Huang, who just had a goal ruled out. Actually, we both went for him for the Sheffield United game when we probably should have kind of look for a game week 29 player. And certainly we've also had sort of other incidents where we've kind of just gone, you know what, even though it doesn't quite fit my strategy, this player's got a few good games, so I don't really want to be going without him right now. So there's always ways and means to move around in that. I suppose it still would mean that the outcomes are all important, really. And just kind of turn the page very quickly to outcomes this week. I know that there are going to be some people who are a bit regretful. And I think I don't think we're going to get into the which free hit was better, 29 or 30 or 34, because that's a bit of a tedious discussion. But I think just to kind of obliquely speak about that a little bit, like outcome bias this week has been huge, hasn't it? Like I think necessarily so, I think, Sam, just because free hit was of great interest to both us who are on free hit and non-free hitters, and everything became so hyper focused on this one week with the small moments. You know, Ben White's second goal, for example, sticks out in mind. Marginal decisions, like we both kind of were having a discussion yesterday, weren't we? The old classic. Oh, he was in my team. He was close to my team. Blah 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 blah. And all the edge pieces this week have been absolutely huge, really. A big shout out and a virtual hug to those who've bench boosted Haaland, Gusto and Palmer this week, by the way. Ouch. What can you say?
That's so unlucky as well. There's nothing you can do to mitigate against that. It's just really poor luck. There's nothing else about that. Palmer going down with an illness well after the deadline as well. What can you say?
I know. And all you can kind of do really here is just think, well, like it's the same as always in FPL. You're putting yourself in positions to get lucky, and there are loads of ways to pull at the thread of kind of feeling regretful. But at the end of the day, you've just got to ask yourself, what would you actually have done? The usual stuff from us it's not always was the decision right or wrong. It's more, were you happy the process to get there? If you've kind of been rushed into a decision, the other week when I bought in Barnes over Gordon just because I hadn't really had time to think it through, or back in the kind of game week 9-10 when I sold Son over Trippier, one of those kind of times when I wasn't happy with the process. And that for me is more upsetting than the actual kind of if it doesn't go well on the day, because at the end of the day, my influence is kind of so distant from what actually happens on the pitch. And plus, you can always point at things like freak outcomes. Like, I didn't have Palace scoring 5 past West Ham. I didn't have Arsenal scoring 5 past Chelsea without reply. Like, these things, but putting yourself in a position for these things to happen is obviously really important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, we have to focus on the decision making, because that's the only thing we can control. We can't control the outcome. And I do see a lot of people saying, oh, it must be poor decision making because the outcome didn't go the way or a specific way, but we play FPL based on future outcomes, not what's happened in the past. We do it based on the past outcomes and predict the future using them, rather. There's probably a better way of putting it. And therefore we can't know what's about to happen, and therefore put all of the decision making and the quality of that decision making based on factors that we don't yet have access to. So yeah, this free hit could have gone really, really well or really, really badly. But as long as the decision making was solid going into it, I think that's absolutely fine. And there will be a load of managers in the other camp right now who free hitted in game week 29, which was something I was very close to doing myself as well. It was only because of like one or two players that happened to remain in my side when other injuries cropped up that I didn't free hit for that week. And again, very, very sharply on the positive end of variance there in certain cases, and for some on the very tip of the negative variance. And again, there was nothing really about the decision making that would have been wrong in your own team necessarily. I'm sure that the reasoning was valid. It's just the outcome obviously sometimes really sucks in FPL. And that's kind of half the reason we play, right? It's because we can't just lock it in with a computer and say this is definitely going to happen with 100% certainty. we just wouldn't play the game. So it's that randomness and that variance, I suppose you want to call it, luck for another word, that makes the game kind of interesting to us. And yeah, without it, what's the point in even playing?
Yeah, you've got to be able to take these things on the chin, haven't you, a little bit?
Absolutely.
That comes with experience. And I think that, you know, we're obviously fairly experienced managers and have gone through our fair share of negative variance, negative outputs, negative outcomes. And, you know, you've got to be happy when things go your way. When things don't go your way, you know, just think, well, it's just, I'm sure that I've done everything I can in terms of everything leading to the decision that I made, normally, anyway. Oh, Liverpool were 2-0 down now.
Yeah. Calvert-Lewin, I think. And Bruno Fernandes got a penalty for Man United as well. Yeah. That's where we're at in terms of the live games.
Maguire with a golden assist, my friend.
Wow. Get him in the Euros.
Of course he will be.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So those are the points of order anyway. Let's get on to the main topic, which is kind of, I guess how much you're going to risk it? How far are you going to go? So we're not on wildcard, and I think that for us to kind of go through a wildcard team would be a little bit, I don't know, I think I'm a bit uncomfortable doing that because it's not really what we're on, and we won't be able to kind of put our, we'd be kind of be a bit more whimsical perhaps, or be a lot less kind of connected to how you're actually feeling if you're making a wildcard. But there are definitely a few points of order that are worth debating, giving our thoughts on if we were a wildcard, because I think we can still kind of give them from the objective point of view, because it does still affect us. And we do still have kind of similar decisions to make, as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, in terms of Saka, Salah, and we already discussed, I think, keeping one Arsenal defender at least, so I think we're going to kind of leave that one be. Just because the defense is utter rubbish. But I mean, Saka, Salah, I've seen most wildcard drafts don't have them in. There's a very good chance that I go into next week without either of them as well. If you were on wildcard, Sam, you've sold Saka, I've sold Saka, would Salah also be joining him in the bin? And would you just go full out for that kind of 37? Because that's kind of the main sort of question here. Do you just kind of go balls to the wall now, effectively, and just aim completely for that 37?
I think it firstly depends if you're on bench boost 37 or not. If you've already used your bench boost, maybe there's an angle that you could keep Salah, but at this point, do you even want to necessarily? But if you are on a bench boost 37 strategy, all of that money that you can save by not having Salah in your team, and meanwhile having five midfielders that are, like, quite comfortably I can pick out 5-6, maybe even up to 10 midfielders who I think would do very, very well between now and the end of the season. And I don't think Salah's really in that top 6 or 7 at this point, especially without the double game week. And for the money, just think about what else you can do to strengthen your 15 if you're thinking about a bench boost. I think it, despite the fixtures not being too bad, I think it's West Ham, Spurs. I can't remember who it is in the double now. But it's a decent fixture run. But for that money, if you're not going to be captaining him in any of those game weeks, and you are kind of sacrificing better options elsewhere in your side on the bench boost, I think it just makes sense to go without him now, spread the money around a little bit, and give yourself a fighting chance of a really, really strong 15 come game week 37, especially if you're on the bench boost, of course.
Yeah, and then the key point, I suppose, with him too, is that removing him basically solves all your problems if you're on wildcard, like any money issues that you've got. Yeah. If you sell Salah, it's done. And I know at this point of the year, I mean, I guess it kind of also doubles down the idea that money doesn't really matter at this point. All you really care about is the fixtures and the efficiency of the players you're buying in. So, for example, you may just think, right, I'm going to sell Salah and buy in Anthony Gordon because they've set them all on fire, really, at the moment, apart from today, and long may that continue. But, you know, Sheffield United at home 35, Burnley 36, Brighton 37. So I know he'll be locked in most wildcard teams. That's an example of a player that you just think, you know what, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to go with him over Salah, who, as you say, you're not going to captain. Good to have a good differential, good opportunity to keep a player like Salah, because you know what he can do. But at the moment, it's what he's not doing, which is key. I mean, we've only seen the first half because obviously we've been podding, but in the first half, there certainly wasn't anything which was really, I guess, making me excited about owning Salah.
A lot of scuff shots, yeah.
I think that he's doing a little bit better in the second half, according to Salah's score anyway, but I mean, what can we do? And I think it's one of those tough decisions that, yeah, okay, form is temporary, but class is permanent. At the moment, all we care about is form because there's no game weeks left for there to be that permanency. You're not buying a player for a medium term. Everything is profoundly short term.
Yeah.
And that makes a couple of things really interesting, a couple of teams really interesting that otherwise maybe you wouldn't be interested in other than a couple of individuals. So Chelsea, 35 double, 37 double, not the best 35 double, but a very good 37 double. You're going to have Palmer anyway, let's face it. If you don't, what are you even doing? Do you even FPL? 37, Notts Forest away and Brighton away. That's a pretty good double, to be honest. And 35, Villa away and Spurs at home. Not the best double in the world, but
decent attacking-wise, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the other team is Man United, who have two pretty decent fixtures coming up, Burnley at home, Palace away, and have the double in 37 as well. Not a very good double at all. And Arsenal and Newcastle. So two teams that people are going to now be looking at, and just to focusing on those at the moment. We'll talk about Spurs in just a second. Despite kind of poor performances, United again struggling against subpar opposition. Chelsea obviously. Jekyll and Hyde, but with loads of options which are either in some cases cheap and questionable, like Petrovic and Gusto, who we both own, or just full-on questionable, like a Jackson, who I don't know how he didn't get a yellow card, frankly.
I don't know how that wasn't a yellow, at least.
I don't know who tweeted it. Someone tweeted the referee clearly has is wildcarding in 35.
Yeah.
Made me laugh. And but yeah, I mean, these sorts of teams, Sam, I mean, how risky do you go? I mean, just to give my perspective, we're both locked in on free Chelsea. But for United, there is a very good chance. I've got Dalot at the moment. There's a very good chance I don't add anyone else to Dalot because my overriding view is that United are rubbish. So, yeah. I mean, what's your view on that?
Yeah, look, if I was wildcarding right now, it would probably have less United than I've actually got in my team. And I've got Onana and Garnacho at the moment, both of which have their own individual issues. One is, in Onana's case, they're just not keeping clean sheets. So personally, if given the choice again, I'd probably just avoid any sort of defence asset for Man United. Going forwards, I'm less worried, especially if Garnacho looks safe for minutes. Obviously, he had that issue. He's apologised. He came back into the starting 11 and obviously survived a little bit of a late fitness scare to start this match. I'm checking now whether he's gone off early. He hasn't. He's still on the pitch. Nope. So he's got to be all right fitness-wise, and he does start every single week pretty much. So I think I can just about make peace with holding on to him. And if you're stretching your budget around a 15, then maybe Garnacho is someone that could sneak in. That being said, I would prefer Bruno Fernandes if I could get to him. Obviously, on penalties, decent data, good in whatever you want to call form, especially for a Man United asset. He's got, I think it's now 8 attacking returns in 7 game weeks. So he's doing all right, getting a few penalties. What's that, sorry?
Back on it, yep.
Back on it, yeah. Look, it's not a kind of mega pick that I'd be super excited to rip up my team to grab right now, but with a double game week on penalties, 90-minute man, I would prefer him. And I, on a wild card, I'd be very comfortable picking him despite Man United's on-pitch form. Garnacho may be one tier down, but again, budget enabler. He's getting good minutes, decent enough data. Outside of that, not really interested at this point. I'd pick one of those two, maybe. And then if you really had to stretch to a Man United defensive asset just for the bench boost to round out a 15,
yeah,
maybe.
Minutes is all you care about, really, isn't it?
That's it.
There's no joy to be had in that double, I don't think. No. Arsenal and Newcastle. Maybe Newcastle potentially, but I mean, they're going to be gunning for it, and you know Arsenal are like at the moment, and they're going to have too much.
Honestly, though, give me a straight heads up between an Arsenal asset in defence and a Man United asset in defence between now and the end of the season. I'm picking the Arsenal asset, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Even it's, double up. Like, is it that crazy to consider a double up for Arsenal defensively? Like, I'm genuinely asking you. Like, I've got defensive issues to sort at the moment. And is it mad to just say, despite the double game weeks and them having none of them, they are that good defensively? Maybe we're just overlooking it.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at 36 versus Bournemouth and 38 versus Everton, plus arguably nicer than 37. And you just think, well, why not? Because, like, I kind of, you see the North London derby in 35 and think, okay, there's probably goals there, so you bench. But would you be surprised if we come away from Bournemouth, United, Everton with three clean sheets? Like, no, not at all. Because we are like City in days gone by at the moment. Admittedly, yeah, we've had our wobble, but I think the kind of the performances over the last couple of games have shown a bit of bounce back ability, to quote Mr. Holloway, which I think are good enough. So yeah, if you want to go back to Benny Blanco, Sam, now have your time with him this season, have a whirl, then I'd be completely okay with it, because, you know, you're looking at stuff on the table right now, and just to kind of flip over to Spurs, like, a lot of people who aren't a wild card this week have got a big problem, and that is Mr. Udogi. So if you wild carded him 30-31 and didn't want to keep the funds back for Porro, because logically you were thinking, you know what, I don't want to be dealing with what I've got to deal with, which is a goalkeeper transfer at some point potentially, because I've got Areola still, or, you know, a Bradley or something like that. You're going to have to make a transfer. And do you just move over to another Spurs player, with Spurs being no great shakes defensively? No idea who you go with. The fixtures from 35 and 36 fixtures are really poor. I mean, they play Arsenal, Chelsea away, which isn't the best game for us at home. Oh, I don't know. Liverpool away in 36, and then City as part of their double in 37. Like, you know, maybe you would just look at that and just think, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to follow the points rather than following the fixtures, which could be a very, very good sort of strategy to follow, to be honest. I mean, I'm not too far from it myself, to be honest, Sam, even though it would mean that I'd be fielding a load of kind of stuff I don't really want to field, at least in the double, having double Arsenal defence where Man United on my bench boost. But if I don't add anyone apart from Dallow to my bench boost from United, then it kind of makes sense from an all-in strategy point of view. I can see myself doing it. And Spurs-wise, I mean, where are you going, really? I mean, you get Son, yeah, absolutely fine. You've got Maddison, who has been, like, kind of anecdotally and in the underlying numbers, off the boil since he came back from injury, I'm going to say. Mm. I think that's too far of a stretch to assert. You got Porro, who's an injury risk at the moment, but I think you may see that with Udogi's injury, that his kind of creative, the need for him to be creative is going to be important. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, for me, I'm looking at getting Vicario, honestly, for my 37th transfer, which is mad, but that looks the way I'm doing it at the moment. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see it. As someone without Porro at the moment, I'm seriously weighing up whether or not that extra fixture, and the fact that they do have Sheffield United and Burnley yet to play, that obviously is a bit further down the line yet before they get to those fixtures, and the short term is not looking so good. But it's whether or not the six fixtures of Spurs is outweighing a Newcastle asset with five, but much better fixtures, or a City asset like Kvaratskhelia, who's maybe less nailed for minutes, maybe a little bit of a rotation threat here or there, but again, much, much better defence statistically. So yeah, I've got a bit of a decision to make. Obviously, Porro isn't a guarantee to be fit for the weekend, although I think, but from the whispers around the community, from what I've seen, he looks likely to be okay. But yeah, it's definitely given me pause for thought either way. And if I was on a wild card, I'd be really struggling to figure out the balance of Spurs assets, because six fixtures is objectively quite a big marginal gain that you can have over players with four. In the last four game weeks, it's going to make a pretty decent difference. But if they're not keeping any clean sheets, then you can't really be looking at anyone outside of Porro, in my personal view. Maybe Vicario, just to have and play on the 37 double, but you're kind of wasting the benefit of having six or up to six double game weekers in 35, because you can only start one of Petrovic or Vicario anyway, and I assume Petrovic will be in a lot. So yeah, it's tough. I think for me, the first two on a wildcard would be Porro and Son if Porro's fit, and then honestly, I'd be pretty tempted to just leave it at that. Maybe Vicario, and the other one that people are talking about a little bit is Brennan Johnson as well, who's gotten decent minutes recently. I wonder if there's an argument to put double Spurs midfield in.
Yeah, he's been very decent actually in terms of the underlying data. And I think that he's kind of successfully seems to transition from impact sub to winning that slot off Kulusevski. There's always going to be X minutes kind of issues with him. I don't know, just thinking about 35 in isolation, which is going to be something which is going to impact wildcarders at the moment. I think you are right that it's you shove in Son, you shove in Porro, you have Palmer, obviously. Beyond that, like the rest of it is kind of a bit questionable. I think that everyone's going to have Jackson just as a default, really, because he's got double-double, really. And like you're looking at the edge pieces really become, all right, do you get Gusto or do you get Petrovic for Chelsea as your kind of your third one? I think, I'm sure that I saw something like De Zazi has started a massive tranche of games apart from the Everton game that he kind of had his rest for. So I saw there were a few people kind of suggesting to shove him in and hope for the best with it.
Yeah.
So maybe you go there, but it's not exactly the most exciting pick in the world, is it? Then Spurs-wise, I mean, there's got to be a lot of people kind of looking at Richarlison, just hoping that he's declared fit by Ange for this weekend. Because I know, as I said, Maddison's not exactly been setting the world on fire. So I don't know. I think you're probably right that maybe you're just kind of shoving Johnson as a pump pick because of the data that he's got. I think we spoke about it a few weeks ago, that his per 90 data is actually really exciting. That to me suggests that even if he's coming off the bench, you're looking at a player who at the moment is in the top five for XGI per 90. He's equal with Isak at the moment.
Wow.
Which isn't bad at all, really. I'm definitely undercooking that. That's really exciting. So you might as well just think, you know what? All right, if he starts one, he comes off the bench for another, he could be the one who could do a job for me. I feel like he might be where you might want to go, really, as your third player. I think that's a good suggestion, Sam.
Yeah, quite possibly. And obviously it all does kind of depend on Richarlison, because him back and ready to start could push Johnson down the pecking order just slightly, because there's only then one position left to fill, and maybe affect minutes a little bit. But yeah, I can definitely see it. 5.9 million at the moment. So maybe you do a 1 week punt and then have a book transfer to switch him to maybe a Gordon, someone like that. Although I'd probably just include Gordon from the start if I was wildcarding now, to be fair.
Yeah, Bruno's scored a brace now.
Wow, there you go.
He's going to be locked in everyone's team, isn't he, going forward? That's a very sort of swift sort of look at it, I'm afraid. I'm sure that you kind of have a better idea of what you're doing if you are wildcarding at the moment, because it's quite straightforward in terms of where you go with quite a lot of the picks, I think. Any other sort of area? I think I've probably brushed over that. Any sort of areas, Sam, that you think are kind of worth further discussion? Like Newcastle, it feels like you just get Cher, Gordon and Isak and leave it there. Man City wise, I suppose you get Foden. You're probably going to keep Haaland at the moment until we've had more information. Maybe you'd leave the third player until 37. Man United feels like Bruno is going to go in most people's teams. AN other, but I don't think I'll be tripling up there. Brighton, I can't see it, apart from maybe Van Hecker making a kind of apologetic sort of bench appearance for the double. And then Chelsea and Spurs, we've discussed. Like, I don't know. Maybe there's a call to just scrap it and just think, okay, I'm going to just go with a player like Watkins, for example, who's just continuing to perform, highest scoring player in FPL and completely ignored by the crowd. Maybe there's a case just thinking, screw it, I'm just going to go there rather than worrying about all this sort of nonsense.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're on a wild card and you're avoiding Salah, then money clearly isn't going to be an issue anyway. So if Haaland's a doubt for beyond game week 34's fixture against Brighton, it's obviously he's not going to play that game. Pep has told us as much at this point. So barring any sort of team leak shock, then I don't think he's fit for 34. Is he going to be fit for 35? I don't know. It's pretty marginal. And if he's looking unlikely to, you could have a third striker slot that you might want to have a bit of fun with for a week or two before moving across to Haaland. Maybe that's an Alvarez. If you know that Haaland's not going to be fit and Alvarez is going to start up front, I'd probably go for Watkins, honestly, at this point. I think the data and just the fact he's been in the form of his life probably earns him a spot even on a wild card if there's that slot going in your forward line for a couple of weeks before inevitably diving on Haaland for the double game week. I think the front eight generally on a wild card seems not fixed. There's definitely like room for manoeuvre, but a pretty strong front eight with a pretty big benching dilemma, headache for game week 35. I've seen a lot of Foden on the bench as first sub for wildcarders this week with Haaland starting. And therefore, if Haaland doesn't play, Foden comes in. So maybe that's a way to play it and just have Haaland anyway, bench it, like kind of know that he's going to get benched. And then on the off chance he starts, just having him in your 11 with Foden to come in case of 0 minutes. It's kind of the defense and the goalkeepers that there's more to debate at this point. And it's basically just trying to pick through a whole ton of rubbish to find seven picks that you think, okay, they could score points between now and the end of the season. Hence my discussion point on going double Arsenal defense, just because at least you know they're good defense.
Yeah, and these are kind of worth discussing as kind of just how risky do we go, like having those sorts of unfashionable double ups. I was considering a Newcastle triple up, but I think I'm, for EO reasons, at the very least, I'm going to have to buy Bruno this week. I think there's not much discussion on that now. And captain wise in 36 and 38, there's going to be probably maybe an impetus to go rogue because it's just trying to find the way to make as much difference as possible. And that you yourself had loads of really, really good options last year, outcomes last year with Wilson in 37 and Kane in 38, which are absolutely fire for you. And those sorts of things, I guess, are kind of what you're always looking for. I mean, last year, if you kind of can spool back to the glory days of 37 and 38, I mean, it was just kind of about taking opportunities, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When you get into the last couple of game weeks, obviously you've got a very clear understanding of what is and isn't possible and what you need to do to get to the rank you want to get to. Obviously, some people will be in a really good position already, kind of want to not necessarily go on the defensive, but just maintain rank. And therefore, the decisions and the players that you're picking are probably more shield picks than anything else at this point. Whereas there's the chasing pack who aren't happy with their ranks. I think both myself and you included in this, and will be a lot more willing to look at the outside picks on those maybe 60-40 decisions or 70-30 decisions, picking the one that's less likely to score the big points, but definitely in the race. It's not like this outlandish pick that is just never going to do well. It's someone that has credibility. They are a decent pick, but they're just not the optimal pick. And I think previous to now, maybe it's been like a 55-45 decision you might want to chance your arm with. Now it kind of, you move that boundary a little bit across and you're like, okay, I'll take a chance on a 30 or a 40% pick versus the 60-70 and hope that it pays off, even with something like captaincy as well, if you're really chasing. And all you need is one or two of them to really pay off and give you heavy positive variance, and jobs are good, and you'll get close to the rank that you want to get to, hopefully. So yeah, I mean, it's the time of the season that you can take a bit of a chance if you want to, or you can kind of shut up shop, pick the high EO players and hope that it's enough to win your mini leagues and maintain the rank that you want to.
I think we'll be definitely trying to chart these individual moments, I think. Matetas has scored again, by the way.
Matetas scored. That makes him top point scorer this week, I think.
It does. I think I've lost my 9-6. But, you know, I'm happy with that because I didn't own White and own Mateta. So, yeah, I mean, we'll definitely be looking at this because I think it all feeds into Arang games. I think that, you know, there's a very kind of select band who are going to be playing this very defensively going forward, looking at, like, the situation I was in basically at the tail end of last year where Lucy and I basically spent a lot of the week kind of thinking about exposure, like who am I exposed to, where am I going to be losing points if I don't own this player, and just trying to make sure that I get kind of the top 20k, I think it was, finished. I was hoping for the top 10k, but it didn't happen. Versus being more aggressive, and, you know, I think anywhere you may be happy with top 100k finish. I think I certainly would be. So as you say, Sammy, it's not going to be being kind of outlandish with the moves, but it is it's still trying to find kind of those nuanced sort of educated opportunities where you can be a bit sort of aggressive, and I think that that's going to be really important to you. I think that most people are going to be aiming for, no matter where you are, probably top 100k if you possibly can. I'm aware most people probably, some people that may be kind of too far away, so you're looking at kind of just trying to ensure that, you know, you get the best outcome you possibly can for the end of the season. The further down you go, I think you're looking at kind of thinking, well, you know what, you might as well take chances, because, like, it's not gonna make no difference if you finish between, I've been in the situation for the first 5 years WGTA, my entire situation was, well, I either finish 200k or 800k, and luckily
you might as well roll the dice.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously different contexts and trip strategies are important, as I'm kind of talking about. But those rank aims start to really kind of kick in as well, alongside that. And there's a certain point where you kind of think, well, okay, I mean, everyone else is going for this guy. So I don't know, maybe in 37 could be a good example for that, where I think that, you know, maybe people would default to Haaland because they've got Fulham away and Spurs away. Maybe look at that and think, you know what, maybe I would go for, I don't know, a Son with Burnley at home, Man City at home. Or maybe you would kind of lump in on Cole Palmer with Forrest away and Brighton away, which is objectively probably the best attacking double there is for a certain player. So there are ways and means, at least, to make the difference here.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's not over till it's over. There will be marginal gains you can make in any one of these four game weeks. It's not all just on the bench boost or whether you're not bench boosting in game week 37. There are four good game weeks here that there will be upside to gain. So yeah, if you're looking to try and steal a march on arrival, if you're looking at regaining rank quickly, don't just laser focus on one game week like 37. You can definitely still get those marginal gains in all the other three. And yeah, that would be my one bit of advice. Just don't ignore all the other weeks and how your team looks in those weeks just for the sake of 37, because everyone's going to be thinking the same thing in 37, and maybe the edge pieces on captaincy or some of the 15th, 14th, 13th man will make a bit of difference, but there's gains to be made elsewhere.
Yeah, we'll cover this as we kind of go further forward. Definitely. As well. Great. Okay. Well, that was our kind of whistle stop look at 35 wildcard. There's definitely going to be more, I guess, instructive content out there about what wildcard will look at. And I think you'll be doing some of that in your videos, Sam, I'm sure.
I'll talk about it in my team selection. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, great. Let's move on to the 35 preview. So yeah, looking ahead to it, transfers and captaincy are probably the key things here. Bold claims wise, let's start there. I don't know whether we've made it. Have we?
Okay. I have.
Ownership.
4.5 live right now.
4.5, nice. Okay, so that's what, 8.87, I think, isn't it?
8.7, yeah, I think. Ooh, so. Unless he gets like a red card or something now, or if like
miss Foden, the penalty, gets a red card.
Yeah, knowing my luck. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm very happy with that. So I went, for anyone not watching on YouTube, I went with a player under 5% EO to be the top scorer this week. It's looking quite likely at this point, unless I've missed another player that's completely popped off. But going into tonight, it was Ben White, and now I think Mateta has overtaken him. But we'll double check after the pod.
No, he has. It's 26 for White, 29 for Mateta.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy numbers, really, isn't it? But yeah, all good on that end. Obviously, as part of that, yours won't pay off, I don't think.
No, but that's all right. I'm happy with the points rather than the consolation prize of the bold claim. The week ahead should be quite tasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going differential again on the top point scorer. So I'm going with a single game week player to outscore any of the double game weekers. So basically not a Spurs or a Chelsea asset to be the top point scorer. I think this is bold enough. Please feel free to like message in if you don't think it is, and I'll have a think about it. But for it not to be a double game week player when there are players like Palmer, Son and other edge pieces in situ, I think would be quite unlikely. So I think this is bold enough.
Yeah, I think that's all right. And my one is I think just kind of because a little about club loyalties, but yeah, Burnley to beat Man United. I fancy them to show up and do something there. I was going to go for the more sort of middle ground of Burnley to get a result, so it's either a draw or a win. But let's go for Burnley to beat United.
Yeah, go then.
I suspect I'm going to be happy. I think that's going to be one now where I'll be happy either way. Where I'll have Dalot and probably have Bruno, and then you know, if it goes well, then FPL wise, then I'll be happy to kind of sack that one off. Burnley to beat United. I think there's good odds on that on several betting websites, so I think I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, yeah, fingers crossed for us both. And with that, shall we... Is it transfers first or captains first? I forget.
I can't remember. What have you got in the slides? What have you got on the slides?
Transfers first for game week 35.
Lovely. Okay, then. So, there are some people not on wildcard out there.
Hello.
So, there's obviously the kind of the Chelsea Spurs factor. Nick Jackson gathering some steam. I'm not sure I'm going to be buying him myself, but mainly because I've got two free Chelsea already. But I don't know. I'm not entirely sure on him. I do see where the data picture is on him. It's a bit of a, I don't know, it feels a bit like Alvaro Morata a little bit with him. Like he always generates this kind of very high XGI. If you watch him play, Darwin Nunez as well is obviously kind of there. You kind of think, oh Christ. But I can see why he's default for wildcarders. I can see why he's kind of, you know, of interest to managers who are looking to buy a player in this week with double in hand.
Well, now he's avoided the ban as well.
Exactly. So I think there's definitely going to be some interest there. And then Spurs-wise, I don't know. Son's coming back for a lot of people, which is absolutely fair enough. I can understand that completely. But looking down the list, I mean, you got people buying Porro back, like 41,000 transfers back in for Porro. We don't even know if he's fit yet, for example.
Until last minute, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the ownership for those teams is going to come from wildcards, effectively. I suppose if you're not a wildcarder, Sam, sorry to wildcarders, but just to cover this off quickly, would you be happy with less than six in this? Like, I've got five, and I think I'm going to leave it there. I've got Son, Porro, Palmer, Gusto, and Petrovic, and Porro, Gusto, and Palmer are all yellow flags.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of right with that. I don't really kind of feel like this double for either team is worth throwing the baby out of the bathwater for, really.
No, I agree. I think there was a good six to get to out of Chelsea and Spurs, but that's kind of evaporated with injury doubts and all of that. And outside of those six, maybe seven at a push, good assets in those teams, it feels like you're kind of just scrambling a little bit just to get any of the players with a double game week. And it goes so far down the menu that I'm like, okay, there are single game weekers that are probably contesting those spots and arguably are standing out as better options in certain cases. So would I prefer a Brennan Johnson or an Anthony Gordon? Probably prefer an Anthony Gordon at this point. Would I prefer a Maddison or a Bruno Fernandes? I prefer Bruno Fernandes. Again, feel free to disagree with me. It's all about opinion. But and then defensively, I'm weighing up, okay, well, Adoghi's out. So that was one of the decent options that I quite fancy for this week. But if he's gone, do I want Porro if he's a fitness doubt? And if he is a proper fitness doubt and he's out for this week or at least half of the double, do I want to go to a different Spurs defender with no attacking upside or at least very little attacking upside? Probably not. So this is a bit of a running theme with double game weeks. We get to it and I start talking about, okay, it's not just about getting all of the doublers for the sake of getting doublers. It's what is the quality of the player that you're bringing in who has a double? And with those two teams, I think there's only maybe 4 or 5 standout picks left that are guaranteed to play or close to guaranteed to play that I'd be that interested in. And unless you just happen to have a Raheem Sterling in your team or something, I don't think I'd be going there, and I probably wouldn't want him in my team. I'd probably transfer him out anyway at this point. So yeah, I've got 4 that are, well, I mean, even 2 of them are flagged at this point, but I expect 4 of mine to start as it stands: Palmer, Gusto, Son and Petrovic. Do I want a 5th or a 6th? Definitely not a 6th at this point. I might buy Porro if he's confirmed fit, but even that is a bit of a stretch for me at this point.
Yep, I'm not going to be falling over myself to buy more of these players. And it is what it is, really. You've got more of an interesting decision to make, I guess. But
yeah,
you know, I'm with you really on being a bit reticent to be going for it. On the other hand, Isaac, Gordon and Cher are gaining a lot of interest at the expense of the likes of Slanky, Darwin, Salah, Saka, Udogi. All makes sense, right? There's nothing really kind of concerning about that. Part of me is just kind of thinking to myself that this is a bit sort of like the last post really for Salah, because this could be the last time I ever own him in fantasy football. And you respect him more given kind of obviously the last, I mean, expect about 300th pod, the last six, seven years of having him in the game. But I think this is kind of it. This is the end, potentially, if he does bugger off to Saudi over the summer. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, getting Newcastle, getting that kind of in and sorted feels pretty good. I'm not really too sure there's much of a... I don't know if there's much argument there. I saw a few people kind of saying, oh yeah, Wilson's on the bench, so you know, there's definitely a chance that he either plays on the wing or maybe kind of has his minutes sapped. But I mean, for us, I'm sorry, we're going to have a small moment here. We've had a very nice run. Owning Isaac is a big differential. Enjoyable. Very happy for everybody else to pile in now. We've definitely had the acceleration in terms of rank from him.
Yeah, he's been one of the darlings of the season. And in fairness, he's kind of racing for the golden boot at this point as well. So I'd be pretty surprised if he got reduced minutes. At worst, maybe he gets pushed out to the wing when Wilson comes on, and maybe one of Barnes or Gordon comes off. More likely Barnes, I'm afraid to say, you would imagine. He's just been phenomenal. And as long as he stays fit, he's one of like their elite standout players. I'd be very surprised that if he were to get majorly reduced minutes, I still think he's going to be a great pick. And look, obviously we've gotten quite fortunate that we picked him up as a differential. He's really exploded as a differential, but I don't think that makes him a worse pick now. And I would definitely be including him on a wild card or buying him with transfers now, ahead of a good fixture run to end the season and a double game week, of course.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm fine with that. Really am.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those where, yeah, okay, like I've got Barnes at the moment, but I think because he got subbed early as well, and with Wilson's return, there is a chance that Isaac, if he does play, will end up maybe playing, as we saw like last year. I think it was game 36, 37 last year. He did end up on the wing, didn't he, a little bit to accommodate Wilson. So maybe we'll see that. I don't know. I feel like that'll be kind of... I feel like I may kind of correct the mistake I made a couple of weeks ago. Most of the transfers in, to be honest, make complete sense. So we don't need to go over them too much, I don't think. And same applies to captain, really. Is there any way you bet against Cole Palmer if he's fit? Is there any way that you look at Son? I mean, obviously a lot of it's going to kind of come down to that Pochettino press conference, but like, Cole Palmer FC. Without him, they've obviously had a bit of a problem. So I can't see really any reason to bet against the guy, unless, of course, he's actually ruled out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people will end up on Cole Palmer. He'll probably have very close, if not over 200 EO, if there's a few triple captainers left. I know my brother, for instance, is probably going to be triple captaining him this week if he is fit. So I think there's a few out there that probably would and won't want to in game week 37 because of the bench boost. But yeah, look, this only really opens up a bit more if he's not fit. I think there will be a few people that go differential on like a Son Heung-min either way if they're really, really chasing. But yeah, it's hard to look past Palmer. He's just been absolutely sensational. I guess the conversation then moves over to, okay, what if he's still ill and doesn't make one of the two games at least? Then it's probably Son versus maybe an Isak or someone like that. A little bit different against Sheffield United, is it? Could be a bit of fun. But yeah, I'd still probably back the double game weaker in that situation. And Son, look, has been good this season. He's not been brilliant recently, but he's been a good asset across the season and on penalties, good minutes. You'd expect him to do something across the double. But this is all a moot point if Palmer starts.
Yeah, if Palmer's fit, it is all moot, isn't it? There's just no point in really kind of, yeah. If it was a very sort of dead section almost, really. Yeah,
very simple. Any other
over 200%, do you think? Do you think there'll be loads of people, I guess for triple captain is still live. That's where you're going to go, isn't it, really?
Yeah. If I was going to put a bit of a wager on it, I reckon it'll be like 192% or something. I don't think it'll quite get to 200. Especially if there is any sort of fitness doubt there, but it will be close. I don't think it's going to be far, far off 200.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all, to be honest. Cool. Well, it's a bit of a short pod this week. We'll go into our teams, transfers and captains, but I've just realised it is Wednesday night. It's not Monday, is it? I think that probably is about all right. So I think I'm up first in terms of our teams this week. Mm-hmm. I think a -4 is on the cards for me. I think Barnes to Gordon, just correct that. I'll sort out the Newcastle defender later on down the line because I've got three doubling defenders, defensive cover, into Petrovic, Gusto, who I'm hoping is fit, and Pedro Porro, again, I'm hoping he's fit, and Dallo. So I'll probably do Barnes to Gordon and probably do Salah to Bruno. I think that's just a... So I got earlier on aggressive versus defensive. I don't think I'm going to be able to overlook the fact that everybody on wildcards is going to own Bruno next week, and he's going to probably literally substitute with Salah in terms of the EO impact of owning him. So that's not owning him, and obviously has been producing recently. Finally, making good on our guffaws before game week one when the prices were revealed about his price and whatever and so on and so on. But yeah, I think that he's probably the ideal sort of Man United attacking asset, I think. Yeah, I think that'll be where I go. Obviously, doing -4 within a week where you're going to see lots of wild cards is not the best thing to be doing. So I'm probably going to be looking at a red arrow, to be honest, unless I get some super fun time with the players that I've got. But nonetheless, I think sometimes we've got to be kind of looking to prep ourselves, I suppose, as we kind of move into the end of the season, the business end. And speaking of prepping ourselves with taking hits, someone was telling me earlier on that they -8 or even a -12 is potentially on the horizon.
It's Samuel, just not.
I believe that was you.
It's not looking good, Tom. For those of you who can't see the screen right now, I've got 5 flags, two of which are like confirmed out for the season, the Doggy and the Cells. So those need sorting. And then outside of that, the other three are Haaland, Palmer and Gusto. And then outside of that, obviously, we're kind of hoping that at least two of them are going to be fit by the weekend anyway, or at least really hoping, because it's two double game weekers and the other one's Haaland. And outside of that, I've got Van Heck, I've got Pedro, I've got, that's João Pedro, by the way, Garnacho as well, who maybe isn't completely ideal. There's a lot of players that I prefer not to have right now. And yeah, I'm not feeling particularly fantastic about how it's looking. That obviously the core pieces don't look too bad, but when you really like pick them apart individually, I'm not massively excited about any of it. And I've still got Salah to sort, because I do want to get rid of Salah for someone like Gordon or Bruno as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of moves I could take. I could do something really drastic, like I mentioned to you, kind of off the cuff, -8, -12, just sort it all out, kind of cash in that the points that I've gained mainly tonight on the free hit, thanks to Mateta more than anything else. And just say, right, okay, revamp and really attack the last few game weeks. But Karma Heads will probably come through by Friday, and it's almost certainly going to be a -4. I'd prefer it not to be anything more than that, but I'm not ruling it out if the squad genuinely needs that sort of surgery to set me up well for the last few game weeks. And if I wanted to roll the dice, and I think I end today on about 85, 90K, something like that. So it then comes down to, am I happy with 100, or do I want to see if I can really push on and take a few risks? So yeah, I don't know at this point. I wish I was a bit more locked in on what I'm going to do. A defender probably needs to get shifted. You'd think a doggy in the cells, one of them gets sorted this week. Yeah. And then maybe I look at getting rid of Salah this week as well for Gordon or Bruno. And then maybe another -4 next week as well. Just kick the can down the road a week, and that maybe sorts me out. But team news, press conferences, all of that will come in handy majorly.
Yeah, you look at it. I said when I looked at your team, it's not as bad as I think that you think it is.
Right.
I completely appreciate, like, if you're in the situation when it's your team and you've been looking at it and you think, oh, this is rubbish, and it's like you give it to someone else and they go, this isn't that bad. You're like, nah, you're rubbish. You're talking crap. This team is awful. Yeah, I mean, you've got obviously a few fires. We've all got some fires, but you've got kind of Udogi and Lascelles who are definite fires. You've got how many free transfers before 37? You've got Salah as kind of your main piggy bank to smash. You probably, as you've kind of documented, want to look at either Bruno or Gordon, or maybe even both. I don't know how you do that. So I think you've got to make a choice there.
Well, it'd be Garnacho that would go as well, I think.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you start to then move things around. And then, I mean, I don't think Garnacho did particularly badly tonight in terms of the underlying data. I mean, obviously, Bruno's been an underlying data hog the entire season.
Which
is of no surprise to anybody involved. Garnacho got an assist and had like an okay game. I mean, took several shots, which I'm not surprised, which probably won't be surprised by, 5 shots on target and a XG of 0.6. So what's to say?
Maybe I'm overthinking it on Garnacho.
What's to say? Like, Bruno's expected goals was 0.8 and he scored 2.
And one was a penalty, by the way.
Any week, I think that there's going to be not too much difference between the two of them. Obviously, there's going to be a bit of a EO concern now as well with Bruno. That's unignorable, unfortunately, and that's probably going to dictate my thoughts. As boring as it sounds, people don't like that, but that's literally the way that I'm going to be thinking about it. I completely understand why you might just say, you know what, okay, which moves can I leave until 37? Evan Ferguson's missing the rest of the season, so maybe João Pedro will be fine to just kind of have. It's going to be minutes at the end of the day.
I hope so, because I'm not planning on selling him.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to be... I mean, as it stands, even though Nick Jackson, the numbers are good, if you look at him play, sometimes there are kind of thoughts which are not going to be tweeted because they can be easily bookmarked and thrown back in your face later on. You look at him and you think, okay, I think I'm happy to go without you, mate. The same with Darwin recently, even though we've both kind of effusively backed him in the past. So I think that's probably right. So yeah, I think having a bit of a piecemeal approach to moving between now and 37 is probably the key. I know you love a plan, you know, you've got the sexy spreadsheet.
Plans are out the table now. They're off the table. I'm just going to wing it out. Yeah, I'm going for it. Yeah, I'm got a full guns blazing.
Spreadsheet
now.
In a bin. Wow, you're rather
hard. Yeah, at this point, the spreadsheet goes. Yeah.
Oh Jesus. Wow.
I generally play it that way in the last few weeks of a season as well. It's such a short term that you're like, I'm going to kind of take off the autopilot a little bit and do it a bit more on gut feel, because you can kind of visualize it without having to map it out with chips in mind or like too much else in mind. So yeah, it's going to be...
You can get away with not bothering dealing with a doggy in the cells for a couple of weeks and just deal with them in 37. Like everything else.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
And I just wouldn't be worried about that. Like I've got, I didn't mention it when we're looking at my team, but I've got bloody like Semenyo, Bradley. I've still got Bradley and Lascelles, and I've got Areola kind of sat around. Like if needs be, because I think West Ham got Luton in 37, I'm end up keeping the Areola for God's sake. But yeah, I've got some players to deal with as well. So it's always going to be that way. If you're not wildcarding this week, so maybe it's just a case of just playing the week in front of you, making that sort of fine. Like for me, just there's going to be a bit of kind of swallowing my pride, which I wouldn't have done in kind of the first couple of seasons of UTA. But now I'm more than happy to just kind of go, right, Barnes to Gordon, whatever, just correct that and move on. And for you, yeah, maybe there is a semblance of just kind of correcting it. I mean, I'd be absolutely fine if you did the salad to Bruno and just left it. Like, because you're probably, yeah. like, Garnacho for the double, absolutely fine. You're going to be, I guess, backing Garnacho to beat Gordon effectively. And you may think, you know, Gordon's a massive exposure. Let's just kind of get that sorted. So I completely understand and completely behind you if you just did that move. United have got 3 home games left versus Newcastle having 2. So maybe that'd be the thing. But the double for Man United, as we know, is rubbish. Yeah, no, it's a tough decision, and obviously that's going to come down to your risk appetite, really. For me, I think I just do Salah, and I think I would do Salah or Garnacho to Gordon and Bruno, and just kind of make sure I've covered the exposure off there a little bit. But okay. I mean, that's the way I think about it. Just because I've got a very kind of skeptical view of effective ownership, and being without a certain player does give me the willies, and that will probably dictate why too.
Okay. No, that's interesting. I think what you say makes a lot of sense, and yeah, I definitely need to consider less drastic options. I think especially at the start of the season, I said one of the lessons I've learned over FPL several seasons is deal with the high upside problems first, and then you can kind of deal with the edge pieces later on down the line when you're better positioned to do so. And if I'm taking -4s, -8s to deal with my 11th man, basically by bringing in a defender for a doggy and upgrading Gabriel, who obviously Arsenal are the best defense in the league, to a double game week Spurs defender, for example, that might not be the best use of an upside transfer, whereas Bruno Gordon could be. I'll have a think about it, and I don't want to bore everyone listening to the pod just with my team specifically, but interesting.
Cool. All right, well, I'm sure we'll speak more, and we'll let you know next time we speak how we've done. Cool. There you go.
Thank you all so much for listening, and hopefully you've enjoyed the show. Whilst we're recording, obviously so many different things happen, so the mood was swinging back and forth throughout the pod. Hopefully that's been fun for you listening in. In the meantime though, we have been Who Got the Assist. You can find us on X at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at FPL Pricey, and on Instagram and Threads at WGTA.FPL. again, I'm just FPL Pricey on there. If you did enjoy the pod, please do consider following us on those social channels, but also leaving a like and subscribing to the YouTube channel if you're watching along on there. Or, of course, if you're listening on Spotify, wherever you're listening, really, do please consider leaving a 5-star rating. That really does help us out.
Yep, nice one. Thanks, Sam. We hope you enjoyed the pod. So we're back next Monday. I think we'll probably fold in reaction to the outstanding Chelsea Spurs game and our Game Week 37 preview. No real time to initial the pod on Thursday, unfortunately. One of us may be back if a big event occurs, you know, Cole Palmer getting injured or something like that.
Yeah.
And as it stands, that's kind of the agenda for next week. But in the meantime, all the best this game week. All the best if you're wildcarding, and we hope we assisted you.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.